Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. The Florida legislative session begins tomorrow. Governor Rick Scott will give his annual State of the State address, and there is an Awake the State rally in Tampa tomorrow. We'll talk about all of this and hear about legislation to watch out for, and we're also going to hear about the Trump administration's new Muslim ban. It was unveiled just a few minutes ago. We'll take your calls. Here's the number, 813-239-9663. So go ahead and call now and get in the queue. You can email your question or comment to DJ at WMNF.org. Text 813-433-0885. I want to begin with a listener commenting after our last show. We played the voices of Florida residents speaking at a town hall meeting in Tampa. Senator Marco Rubio was invited to that town hall but didn't attend. Here's one listener comment.
Hi, Sean. This is Ron G. I was listening to the sentiments of all the people that were having problems with their supposed leader, Representative Marco Rubio. Well, I have a thing and a question for him to be posed by his constituents and probably by the American people. How are they playing the 14th Amendment right about now and the 5th Amendment, which made the 14th Amendment applicable to the states? They're stepping and trampling all over that vis-a-vis making new laws, which is unconstitutional. How do they think or feel about that? Because I think that's what they're angry about. Thank you.
Well, that was one listener commenting about our last show. Later on in the broadcast, I'll give out the number for you to leave a voicemail. You can always listen to previous shows and comment on those stories. That's on our website, which is WMNF.org/news. You can join the conversation on Twitter or Facebook at WMNF News. As promised, we're going to talk about the Florida legislative session and some bills that are going to happen this session. We're going to do that in just a few minutes. I want to talk right now about news that's just breaking. This hour, the Trump administration unveiled its new revised travel ban on residents of six Muslim-majority countries. President Trump has signed that revised ban. It temporarily halts entry to the U.S. for people from six Muslim-majority nations who are seeking new visas. It also suspends the country's refugee program. The new directive aims at addressing legal issues with the original order, which caused confusion at airports, sparked protests around the country, and was ultimately blocked by federal courts. The revised order is narrower and specifies that a 90-day ban on people from Sudan, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen does not apply to those who already have valid visas. The White House also dropped Iraq from the list of banned countries. So I want to hear what you have to say about this. Do you think that this is going to solve the legal problems with the ban? We're going to hear now about a 10-minute press conference, but it wasn't a press conference. It was just a statement. And then the three government leaders kind of left while the reporters were asking questions. They did not answer any questions. We're going to hear first from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and then John Kelly from the Department of Homeland Security. They were talking maybe about 15, 20 minutes ago about the new travel ban. We'll start with Rex Tillerson.
The executive order signed by the president earlier today, protecting the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States, is a vital measure for strengthening our national security. It is the president's solemn duty to protect the American people. And with this order, President Trump is exercising his rightful authority to keep our people safe. As threats to our security continue to evolve and change, common sense dictates that we continually reevaluate and reassess the systems we rely upon to protect our country. While no system can be made completely infallible, the American people can have high confidence we are identifying ways to improve the vetting process and thus keep terrorists from entering our country. To our allies and partners around the world, please understand this order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends. The State Department will coordinate with federal agencies and implement these temporary restrictions in an orderly manner. Our embassies and consulates around the world will play an important role to ensure the nation is secure as it can be. And the State Department will implement the provisions in this order that allow for the admissions of refugees when it is determined they pose a risk to security or welfare of the United States. Upon the President's initial executive order issued on 27th, the State Department's consular affairs and diplomatic security offices immediately undertook a review in coordination with the Department of Homeland Security to identify additional measures that would strengthen our vetting of those seeking entry to the United States from seven named countries. These early efforts were concentrated on Iraq. Iraq is an important ally in the fight to defeat ISIS, with their brave soldiers fighting in close coordination with America's men and women in uniform. This intense review over the past month identified multiple security measures that the State Department and the government of Iraq will be implementing to achieve our shared objective of preventing those with criminal or terroristic intent from reaching the United States. I want to express my appreciation to Prime Minister al-Abadi of Iraq for his positive engagement and support for implementing these actions. The United States welcomes this kind of close cooperation with countries in every region of the world who share our commitment to national security. This revised order will bolster the security of the United States and her allies. Now, we've spent the morning briefing the Congress, the press, and we will continue to talk with key stakeholders this afternoon. Experts from the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, and the State Department hosted an hour-long call with the media on this topic this morning. Our collective teams will continue throughout the day to follow up with the Congress, the media, and stakeholders to answer your questions. I'll now turn it to the Attorney General for his comments.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and good morning to all of you. One of the Justice Department's top priorities is to protect the United States from threats to our national security. Therefore, I want to discuss two points. First, the national security basis of this order, and second, the Department of Justice's role in defending the lawful orders of the President of the United States. First, as President Trump noted in his address to Congress, the majority of people convicted in our courts for terrorism-related offenses since 9/11 came here from abroad. We also know that many people seeking to support or commit terrorist acts will try to enter through our refugee program. In fact, today more than 300 people, according to the FBI, who came here as refugees are under an FBI investigation today for potential terrorism-related activities. Like every nation, the United States has a right to control who enters our country and to keep out those who would do us harm. This executive order seeks to protect the American people as well as lawful immigrants by putting in place an enhanced screening and vetting process for visitors from six countries. Three of these nations are state sponsors of terrorism. The other three have served as safe havens for terrorist countries, countries where governments have lost control of their territory to terrorist groups like ISIL or Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. This increases the risk that people are admitted here from these countries may belong to terrorist groups or may have been radicalized by them. We cannot compromise our nation's security by allowing visitors entry when their own governments are unable or unwilling to provide the information we need to vet them responsibly, or when those governments actively support terrorism. This executive order responsibly provides a needed pause. We can carefully review how we scrutinize people coming here from these countries of concern. Second, the Department of Justice believes that this executive order, just as the first executive order, is a lawful and proper exercise of presidential authority. This Department of Justice will defend and enforce lawful orders of the President consistent with the core principles of our Constitution. The executive is empowered under the Constitution and by Congress to make national security judgments and to enforce our immigration policies in order to safeguard the American public. Terrorism is clearly a danger for America and our people. The President gets briefings on these dangers and emerging threats on a regular basis. the federal investigative agencies, the intelligence community, the Department of State, the Department of Homeland Security, and the United States military report to the president. Knowing the president would best possess such extensive information, our founders wisely gave the executive branch the authority and the duty to protect the nation. This executive order is a proper exercise of that power. Now, I will turn things over to our able secretary.
Well, that's Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I'm not going to play the sound from John Kelly. He didn't say as much as Rex Tillerson did or Jeff Sessions. We heard from Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson just moments ago. This was in the last half hour or so. They were talking about what's being called the new travel ban, Trump's travel ban 2.0, which will restrict entry for people from six Muslim majority countries. Iraq is no longer one of those seven countries. So it's only Iraq is not one of them, I should say. Sudan, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen are the six countries. Also, if people have a valid visa, they are not, this ban does not apply to them any longer. So I'd like to hear what you have to say. Give us a call, 813-239-9663, and let us know whether you think that whether you agree with this ban, whether the changes that were made you think are legally enough, I guess, to withhold the legal muster, because the courts turned down the first one. And so we'd like to hear what you think. Maybe you think that it will be okay in the courts, but you still disagree with it. Or if you agree, let us know. The number to call is 813-239-9663. You can also email at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. It's 12:18 in the afternoon. We're going to talk in just a few minutes about the Florida legislature and some bills that we can expect to come up during the legislative session that starts tomorrow. And I want to hear from you. The number is 813-239-9663. Well, over the weekend, I got this song in my head. I'm not sure why. I was reading Twitter and all of a sudden got this song in my head Saturday morning. So we're going to take a quick musical break and we'll be back with my guest in just a moment. But stay tuned on 88.5 FM to Midpoint Monday.
Met a girl called Lola and I took her back to my place. Feeling guilty, feeling scared, hidden cameras everywhere. Hold on, stay in control. Girl, I want you here with me, but I'm really not as cool as I'd like to be. Cause there's a red under my bed, and there's a little yellow man in my head, and there's a true blue inside of me that keeps stopping me, touching you, watching you, loving you.
That's the Kinks with Destroyer from 1981. I'm not sure how I was thinking about when I was hearing about all that paranoia that was going on. Well, the Florida legislative session begins tomorrow. Governor Rick Scott will give his annual State of the State address. There's also an Awake the State rally in Tampa, and our guest is helping to organize that. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're going to hear about legislation in the Florida legislature to watch out for, and we're going to take your calls. The number is 813-239-9663. Tim Heberlein, my guest, is a political operations director for Organize Florida. Do I have your title right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, good. Welcome back to WMS Midpoint, Tim.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
All right, so what is Organize Florida, and what are you organizing tomorrow?
So Organize Florida is actually a grassroots membership organization we founded back in 2009 when we were actually fighting for earned sick time in Orange County. Started in Orange County, and we just expanded to include Tampa and Osceola this last year during the election season, and we're over on Waters and Del Mabry. And we're kicking off also with our Stand With Women and Families platform, which is sort of the basis for why we're engaging in the legislature and a lot of these issues. Well, as you know, like you said, the governor's having his State of the State tomorrow, which he's already come out and gone after a lot of the things that we hold dear as Floridians, and we need to make sure that folks are aware of what's going on up there and protect them, and that the governor is also prioritizing in his budget a lot of things that are not necessarily going to be helpful for the people of Florida. The budget is aside from just being, you know, a list of line item of things to fund, is basically a list of our priorities as a state. And so there's a lot of things here which we know are not prioritized appropriately, and we have a lot of issues with how things are coming down from Tallahassee, and we want to make sure that there's a budget and a legislature that's working for everybody and not just giving handouts to corporations to get a lot more money for his cronies and the folks that are supportive of him, but actually something that works for every Floridian. So there's, and a lot of other issues too that are surrounding that budget as well as our priorities as Floridians. So.
And are you helping to organize the Awake the State rally in Tampa tomorrow?
Yeah, so tomorrow, so we didn't peg it necessarily as a rally just because we're having it at 2, which is immediately following, well, it's a little bit following his State of the State. We do have a lot of great allies coming with us, Black Lives Matter, the AFL-CIO, Fight for 15, Organize Florida is also bringing folks that are speaking to healthcare and reproductive rights. We also have folks that can speak from the immigrant community that are talking about some of the horrible bills that are coming down and are affecting the immigrant community here in Florida. And also the environment. There's a lot of really important environmental bills that we actually are on the supporting. So we're looking to make sure that there's the good bills get passed and we stave off some of the bads, the worst stuff. So, but yeah, there's a lot to be paying attention to. And because Florida has a short legislature, it's going to be between now and May, these bills move very rapid fire. Actually, committees weeks have already begun a few weeks ago. And so a lot of these bills are in their second and third final subcommittee in which they have to pass. And so we're looking to make sure that Floridians are aware that, you know, there's some terrible bills out there that are not in support of all Floridians, that, you know, we have to protect our environment, protect health care that is right now in danger at the state and at the federal level. Education that is also at risk and deprioritized both financially and as a priority by the legislature. Even I think the Speaker of the House came out directly against teachers unions who, you know, speaking personally, my wife is a teacher and also a member of her union, also a part of her a shop in, as a school teacher. And a lot of these issues are at stake in Tallahassee, and we want to make sure folks are aware of that.
And we'll talk in more detail about a lot of those bills. And I just want to remind people that this is Tim Heberlein. He's a political operations director at Organize Florida. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:24 in the afternoon. We're going to take your calls. We're also going to talk about a lot of the bills that are coming up in Florida legislature. And I should say that tomorrow, Awake the State Tampa, that's at 2:00 in the afternoon at Gaslight Square Park in downtown Tampa. If you're interested in going there, that's what it is. Well, let me mention, and I'm going to get to the people on hold on the phone in just a moment, but you can call in and get in the queue as well. But I want to ask you, Tim, about a state Senate committee will consider a fracking ban tomorrow. So they've already, this has already gone through committee, as you mentioned. It's already gone through a couple of committees, maybe one or two committees so far, and it's going to go to another committee tomorrow, the very first day of the official legislative session. And the bill is by Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young. That's a fracking ban. Does your organization have an opinion about the fracking ban? And I'd like to hear from our listeners what you think about any of these bills as well. 813-239-9663.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a very big vested interest. We were one of the folks that we knocked on several thousand doors, I think about 16,000 doors, in the Senate District 18 that's represented by Senator Young. And we called her out basically last session. She was not supportive. She was supportive of we called it the fake ban bill. But this bill is great. We're very strongly strongly supportive of this. We appreciate the senator. We actually gave the senator a thank you card when she came to Tampa, spoke at Cafe Con Tampa, and we gave her a thank you card for supporting the ban on fracking. We knocked on, about 16,000 doors in support of clean water and related to this fracking ban. And so the way that it's written is great. We want to see this thing through. We have a vested interest because we had talked to so many people, talked to thousands of voters in Hillsborough County in the district that were very supportive of clean water, and that they understand the risks that fracking gives to Florida, the risk that puts Florida in as far as the not only clean water, but also as far as our energy independence goes. We actually bring in we spend billions of dollars on energy, which is actually outside of here, rather than relying on the sunshine, which we are woefully behind on, and as far as a solar power production leader. But we are very supportive of this just because this does speak to Floridians who are underrepresented, who don't necessarily have lobbyists that can speak for, you know, support their clean water. We know this is a huge priority because the oil and gas industry has put a ton of lobbyists. This is their number one priority in Florida. And we know the voice of the people, as it did in the election when we spoke out against this. And this is, I believe, why Dana Young has such a great change of heart, is because she listened to the people of Florida. She listened to people of her district that supported a ban on fracking and knows that this is not good for Florida. This is not good for our environment. It's not good for our energy production, that a ban on fracking is the only way to go. This is an outright ban. And so we're very supportive of it. It's Bill 442 and 451 for those folks that want to look it up. It's a very important bill for us. So,
what's the best way for people to find information about bills?
So actually, Florida does a really good job of transparency on bills. As far as like understanding where they're at in the process through their first or second reading, what subcommittees they're assigned to. So in the House, it's myfloridahouse.gov. And then the Florida Senate website is flsenate.gov. I believe. And actually, you can actually even sign in an account and find bills that you're interested in tracking. I think the other part too is like not being over inundated with the number of bills that are happening up there, because it's in the thousands and it's rapid fire, rapid pace. But also going to organizations like Organize Florida, like the Sierra Club, like Environment Florida, for instance, for this particular bill, and making sure that you're engaged with those organizations because they do have folks that are that spend their entire time focusing on tracking bills, finding out which ones are the important ones, whether to support or oppose. And Kent Bailey from the Sierra Club will be speaking at tomorrow's Awake the State meeting, Awake the State press conference, to talk about fracking as well as a lot of other important environmental issues.
And back on fracking, as we wrap up that first type of bill, for people who don't know, it's a type of drilling technique to get oil and gas, and it involves injecting chemicals and water into the ground to break up what's underneath the ground, and that makes it easier to extract more gas. And because of Florida's karst limestone geology, that's why some environmentalists are worried that maybe if fracking were to work somewhere else, that Florida wouldn't be necessarily a place where it would be safe at all.
Yeah, because and just for full disclosure, I used to work for the Sierra Club before I came on with Organized Florida. And so we in Florida were very hydrologically shallow area, and it so affects anything that can affect our water table could affect a large portion of the state. Also here in Florida, we would have most likely acid well stimulation type of fracking. It's another type of fracking that injects more chemicals into it, and it's very dangerous to our environment, our water table. And I'll leave it as just like my personal story. My grandfather, who recently passed, working on selling his house in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is like basically one of the top places for fracking. And they actually have very distant from fault lines. They have earthquakes, 4.5 magnitude earthquakes in Oklahoma now. And so when selling his house, it became very, very difficult because of the earthquakes that were going on in Oklahoma City. It was ridiculous. And this is a direct result of the fracking industry that's going on out there. And again, in Florida, where we are very hydrologically sensitive to these type of extraction methods, it's not healthy for us at all. So,
our guest is Tim Heberline. He's Political Operations Director at Organize Florida, and you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. And let's go to the phones now. Right now we have John on the line in St. Pete. Hi, John.
Hi. I called in last week to talk about the Marco Rubio rally and encourage people to attend. And, of course, Rubio has vacated the premises. So I just wanted to call and just tell people who are feeling orphaned about another demonstration they could attend. It's by a group called Peace First, and it's Wednesday from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. in St. Petersburg. It's at the corner of 34th Street, U.S. 19, and 22nd Avenue North. There's a Winn-Dixie, there's a car dealership, a CVS pharmacy on that corner. And it's there's a lot of traffic. We get a lot of active participation from the passersby, both pro and con. But I've been part of the Rubio demonstration for a while. We were really starting to build community. I'd been part of the group that went in to talk with Senator Rubio's staff, and suddenly zip. So if folks are looking for a way to express their concerns about the Trump administration, about the ACA, and so forth, of course, Awake Florida tomorrow, but we will be at that corner every Wednesday through March.
John, thanks for the call.
Sure.
All right, thanks. I appreciate that. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'll get to the people on the line in a little bit. And but I want to continue this conversation. And I got an email from Anita. And Anita is saying, Sable Trail is already horizontally fracking. This pipeline will affect Tampa's drinking water eventually. And in this case, I think Anita is talking about fracking underneath the rivers, for example, not in order to extract natural resources, not to extract the fossil fuels, but in order to drill a hole in order to place the pipeline. So I don't know, would horizontal fracking in order to drill a pipeline route, would that be covered under the fracking ban? I don't know if it would.
No, so Sable Trail is actually a separate issue. It is important because Sable Trail is one of the large transmission pipelines that they're looking to bring in. Again, when I mentioned a lot of our money goes out of state to bring in natural gas from that is other places. We're basically buying energy from the other parts of the country when we could be producing it here on our own. But Sable Trail is one of those large pipeline projects which they're looking to bring a large amount of natural gas into Florida. And we actually went over to Polk County about a month ago. And a lot of folks, it's crazy to see these transmission lines that are, you know, there's a lot of negative health effects associated with them. Suddenly these are running directly by schools. I don't know if there's folks remember in California it was like last year where there was a huge leak and this was very dangerous to the community of gas that was leaked from the pipeline. And here these are running literally, we saw it directly across from an elementary school from of new development out there where there's a nice golf course and these fancy houses, and they don't know that there's this, you know, somewhat dangerous transmission line running right next to the road. And a lot of folks were just like, oh, I thought that was a water pipe. And this is actually being installed just down the road in Polk County. And we went out there to oppose that and to get the community educated on what their dangers were for having these transmission lines near their residences, near their businesses. These aren't good. And when I say we have the potential to do it here, you know, consider the economic benefits of it, of being able to produce energy here as opposed to sending a lot of our money out of state to, you know, companies that don't, you know, say care about our energy independence. And Rick Scott is supporting those folks, you know, by doing so. So, yeah, the Sable Trail transmission line is a separate issue for that because it is essentially just laying down a pipeline. But in that process, we understand, too, that those run through communities that are, you know, disproportionately impacted by climate change, by environmental issues. They tend to be communities of color. They tend to be lower income communities that get the effects of these things. But, you know, these are the folks that you're not going to see sitting on the board of directors of Sable Trail Transmission, right? So, you know, we're there to make sure that they have a voice and that Rick Scott is held accountable for his letting polluters pollute unaddressed. So,
our guest is Tim Heberlein. He's with Organize Florida, and you can call in and ask a question, 813-239-9663, or dj@wmnf.org is the email. Text 813-433-0885. Let's turn now to gun legislation. There's so many things going on with guns in the Florida legislature this session. There are ideas to allow guns in airports and government buildings, universities, sporting events, polling places. and even open carry on the streets. This is the AP says there are about 24 gun-related bills that have already been filed, and the vast majority would expand gun rights so they can be carried in places that they're now not allowed. And Democrats have proposed more restrictions, but they have virtually no chance of passing. So what would you say about these gun legislation that's going through Tallahassee?
Well, it's disconcerting, right? It goes back to our priorities as a state. Instead of addressing the needs that we have in inadequately funded education and in health care, we're focusing on guns and gun legislation that actually increases or decreases the safety of Floridians everywhere, as we can see in the most recent shootings, and fortunately in Fort Lauderdale. One of the bills that was presented, I think, by one of the local representatives, Rayburn, was there was an omnibus bill about open carry, and concealed carry in a lot of these other places. I think there was thought that that wouldn't pass, so now that there's multiple bills regarding gun legislation across the state, which do exactly the opposite of gun safety. And so that's a big concern for us and our folks. Organized Florida, actually, again, having a large presence in Orlando, had a lot of our friends who were victims to the shooting in Pulse. And, you know, we have had several of our staff attend funerals for our friends over there. And, you know, we say, where does the madness stop? And some of these bills we were able to stop. Even last session, the legislature foolishly scheduled a Stand Your Ground bill, which actually would have made the Stand Your Ground legislation, the rule worse. And they scheduled that on the anniversary of Trayvon Martin's death. And so we had about four buses ready to go up to Tallahassee to shut it down if they intended to do this. And then so thankfully that stopped with leadership from our local legislative bodies here. And shout out to Rev. Narain for leading that charge as well. There was a lot of anger from that. And a lot of our members are scared. They're still heartbroken from some of the horrendous acts that took place in our state and in our communities. And this gun legislation does nothing to, like, again, it's expanding the rights to conceal carry in so many of these places, as opposed to addressing the issue of how to combat gun violence. And so that's one of big concern that we have as Organized Florida does. I can't speak for the other organizations with Awake the State, but that is one concern we have with the massive amount of gun legislation that has come through the legislature in the last couple of weeks. And actually, last session was actually a really good one for folks that are supportive of gun safety. I say this as a gun owner myself. I own 2 guns at home, go to the range. It's great, and I understand the massive responsibility and the danger that does present by having a firearm in the house, and that's something that, you know, to be understood and respected. So, but last year during the legislative session, we were able to kill 3 of the NRA's biggest priority bills there because of the people spoke out, because the people demanded it. And that's what Awake the State, that's what Organized Florida is about, is making sure that those voices get heard.
We're speaking with Tim Heberlein, Political Operations Director at Organized Florida. I'm Sean Canaan, the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:39 in the afternoon, and we're taking your calls at 813-239-9663. I do have some people holding, but I'm going to do a very quick email first. 813 asks, what is the location of the peace protest on Wednesday? And that location is in St. Petersburg at the corner of 34th, which is US 19, and 22nd Avenue North. So
I could make a mention on Wednesday too. So Wednesday is also International Women's Day for folks that don't know. There's a lot of other events going on as well, just to give a shout out to those. I didn't want to ruin John's thing earlier. I want to appreciate John doing everything and going after Marco Rubio. So,
and we'll go back to the phones in just a second. I want to mention some news that's breaking this morning. The head of Enterprise Florida has resigned. And Enterprise Florida, again, I guess this person's only been in the job for, I think it's been 2 months. There's been a proxy war maybe between Governor Rick Scott and House Leader Richard Corcoran about whether or not the government should hand money out to businesses, I guess is the simplest way to put it, and how much. And Corcoran is definitely in the Koch brothers camp that says, look, there should not be any, governments shouldn't pick winners and losers, and let's defund Enterprise Florida, let's reduce the amount of funds that Visit Florida gets. That's been just in the news. I don't know, is that something that you have any insight on, that your group has been following at all, to talk about whether, you know, do you support cutting off funds for Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida?
Well, this goes to the governor's budget priorities, right? Like, we have a governor that is investing in corporate giveaways to, you know, folks that support him, massive corporations that aren't adding what we need in Florida, that aren't providing good quality jobs. And this is, you know, as opposed to addressing the needs that we have in education. You know, we're 41st in per pupil spending in education. We are drastically underfunding our environmental protections and our water protections. We have not even addressed addressing the Everglades issues. We're looking at now these massive cuts to healthcare. And so, you know, this goes back to the governor's budget priorities, that are we going to give corporate giveaways, or are we going to be focusing on the things that really matter to Floridians and help protect and provide a good quality of life? And so that's the question I have. Nothing specific on those two entities, because I know that will be hashed out, you know, very shortly, and by the time the budget goes to the legislature. But we want to see something that's inclusive over there that provides those things and makes a more equitable Florida.
And I should say that the state Senate wants to spend more money on the environment and higher education. The House and Governor Scott want tax cuts. And let me read a little bit more from the AP about the budget. Florida legislators are required to annually pass a new budget. Governor Scott has recommended an $83.5 billion budget that includes money for his tax cuts, steep reductions for hospitals, we can talk about that in a bit too, and uses local tax dollars to boost school spending. And House Republicans are opposed to Scott's use of local property taxes, and they're expected to call for large budget cuts while also increasing spending on education. Senate President Joe Negron wants to eliminate a tax break for the insurance industry and use the money to cut taxes charged on cell phone service and cable television. Negron also wants to boost spending on universities and colleges. Well, if you'd like to weigh in, we're going to go to George in Lakeland in just a second. But if you want to weigh in on this, it's 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. George, you want to talk again about the Sable Trail Pipeline?
Yes, I just want to tell you that, yes, it's already been buried. It's underground already in that area in Polk County, which is called 1792. And the elementary school that he talked about is called Loftman Elementary. And that community, the subdivision, is called Providence. I know that area. I canvassed it in 2008 for Obama. And, you know, most of those people that live in that area, they don't care. They're all primarily Republicans. They don't care about the environment. They only care, but they will care if there is an explosion. Then they'll care, but by then it's just too late. So that's just that area. You know, they're about driving diesel trucks. They're about, you know, just destroying the environment. As long as the quality of life is good and they got cheap gas, they're happy. That's the area.
And there's some parts of the pipeline that are still under construction. In fact, it was about a week and a half ago or a week and a couple of days ago when up near Dunellen, there was a man who I guess was upset at the construction of the pipeline and used a rifle or something to shoot holes in the pipeline. And then the police chased him and they eventually killed him. So that was up in Dunellen.
So that's crazy. I mean, the time to protest is by voting. And, you know, when you keep voting for people like Rick Scott, you know, what do you expect? You're going to get pipelines. We're going to get fracking. We're going to get, you know, pollution. So that's our time to protest, is to get out and vote, not stand over there and shoot at things. I mean, that's not going to get you nowhere. But what can you do? Let's see if in 2018 we wake up and vote for someone that's pro-environment instead of the same old in Florida.
All right, thank you for that call.
Alrighty.
Thanks, George. I appreciate that call. 813-239-9663. We have some people on hold, but we'll get to them in a little bit. And I want to let you know that you can call in right now. 813-239-9663. Now, in general, you hear out of Tallahassee, or, you know, conservatives in general, I think it's pretty fair to say, they say things like local control, states' rights. But then sometimes they preempt what's happening locally. So, oh, there's some examples, though, in Tallahassee where the state legislature wants to say to local communities, no, we know better. We know better than your local communities. We want to take control.
Yeah, there was a bill filed, HB 17, out of with a freshman fine. I think it's a fines bill. But basically, it's a preemption of all. The language is so overarching and overbearing that so many people are coming out against this bill because it's in the first, 1 through 21 is technically we. The Speaker of the House typically reserves those slots for his priority bills, and for some reason this is in there. And what this would do is basically prohibit all preemption of any local municipality or county anywhere of anything that would affect businesses. So it's like anything from like noise ordinances to human rights ordinances, those things would be forbidden by the state legislature. And so this is when we came up on when we were fighting for earned sick time. We presented it at the county level in Orange County, the ballots, we collected 50,000 petitions. We got it on the ballot and we needed to get the blessing from the county commission. They were actually collaborating with state legislatures and we sued them. We won, but the damage had been done. They delivered the quote unquote kill shot in Tallahassee that preempted counties from passing earned sick time ordinances. So 50,000 voices were silenced and we actually went on the ballot and won, even though, we got the signatures, it won, but because the preemption law had already passed. So this is one of those things where the folks talk about local control except when it suits them. And this is a bill that, for some reason is written, it's very overarching. It's concerns us because it's there in the Speaker's priorities slot list. And we want to make sure that Floridians know that this is not good for Floridians. We have a lot of allies in this. And we believe that a lot of local legislators, especially ones that have served in local municipalities, are opposed to it. So HB 17 is one regarding local preemption.
That could go back a little bit to the fracking as well, because during the vote last year, there were local fracking bans, and that the bill that was up for a vote last year would have disallowed, made those illegal. And so that it's an, or maybe yeah, you can also think about minimum wages. If maybe a municipality like Tampa or St. Pete decided that it wanted to raise its minimum wage above the state's minimum wage, a bill like this could say that's not allowed.
Yeah, basically, I mean, the language is so broad. Anything that affects business in Florida would be prohibited and be reserved for the state, which is, ridiculous. But again, it's something that we're just concerned about because of where it's at in the bill order. And we just want to let folks know that this is something that will have a drastic effect on you, in our everyday life. So we wanted folks to be aware of those type of preemption bills. Anytime that you remove the ability of local governments to have that say in it, it just goes to, for Rick Scott and these folks that are supportive of these policies that don't speak for everyday Floridians in these communities that are affected by these issues, that don't have, taking away that control of them to be able to decide their own futures is not democratic, small d. So we're standing up in opposition to that with a lot of other great coalition partners.
Our guest is Tim Haberlein, Political Operations Director at Organize Florida. I'm Sean Canan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday, and we'll go to the phones in just a second, but I want to read this quick email. It says, this is James out there, says, just curious how many people attended the pro-Trump rally in St. Pete this weekend? And to answer James's question, my understanding is there was not one in St. Pete. I mean, it could have been organized after, I went home Friday night and I didn't know about it, but my understanding, there was not one in St. Pete. There was one in Sarasota, and I don't remember the exact number. I think about 200 people showed up there. About 2,000 showed up in Miami, and some maybe 150 showed up in West Palm, and then there was a certain number in Lee County as well. And I don't recall the numbers off the top of my head. So I don't know if there was one in St. Pete, but if I missed it, please let me know. And let's go now to John in Pinellas Park. John called 813-239-9663, and you can too, to get on the air. John, what's on your mind?
Well, this whole system is so crooked that it stinks. It's obvious that our votes do not count. these electoral votes were probably bought by Trump. I'm sure he walked around and gave each one of these guys $1 million, put me in office, then I can feed all my fat cat buddies. But we keep feeding the system by working within the system and paying our taxes and stuff. That's what the beast feeds off of. I say, this year at tax time, just don't pay your damn taxes.
Hey, John, you know, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here for a second. I don't think that Donald Trump needed to pay off his electoral votes. I mean, he won the Electoral College, and then he got that number of Electoral College votes. In fact, he lost a couple, and so did Hillary Clinton. You really think that was corrupt there?
Why do you know what? The electoral vote's an outdated process. Why do you have a vote if you don't go by popular vote? Okay, I wasn't for Hillary either. I was for Bernie. But she got more votes than he did.
Okay, that's a completely different issue. Yeah, good point. Okay, so you're interested in having a nationwide popular vote. So let me turn that into a question. Thank you for that call, John. Let me turn that into a question for Tim. You know, a lot of states, California, for example, have something where they'll use the popular vote to decide their electors. Once enough states that would make up 51% or more than 50% of the Electoral College would also go along with that. It's called the nationwide popular vote, and they would still use the Electoral College, but it would be a lot more symbolic. They would just simply elect the person who won the popular vote. Is that something that could happen in Florida?
Well, there's a bill that's Senator Son has introduced 242, which would actually do that, as to my understanding. I got to look at specifics of it. Basically, it's moving away from the Electoral College. Like you said, there's a lot of systematic concerns that were brought up during this election. And, you know, that's being introduced. I don't know if that's going to have any legs, if it's going to go anywhere, but the conversation is happening in Florida. And I think the gentleman, you know, we talked before that's talked about, you know, our vote matters. Absolutely. Like our biggest form of protest where we can, you know, create that the new, you know, what Florida can look like. It happens at the ballot box. It doesn't stop there, but it definitely starts there and showing up for elections. And so we know that those things do matter, that, you know, that money that goes to election campaigns is just a means to communicate people's message to you. You know, you can't buy a vote. When you stand in the voting booth, you make that decision. And unfortunately, the system that, as it exists now, you know, did not, chose a person who, is provide a lot of at the very least very disconcerting policies in this current administration. And so a lot of that happens by getting engaged, not stepping back from the system, but actually stepping towards it and becoming engaged. And that's what Organized Florida is about. That's what Awake the State is about, is fighting for a Florida that works for everybody. So
we got a little bit into the national politics of it there with that call, but I think if we focus back on Florida, and one thing that people notice about Florida is if you look at the number of people who are registered Republicans in the state, it's something like 39, or I don't know the exact number, but it's in the neighborhood of in the high 30s of percent of Republicans registered in Florida, and there's probably, you know, 30 something percent Democrats as well, and a huge chunk of people who are neither. Mm-hmm. Yet you look at the Florida legislature and it's 2-1 Republicans to Democrats about. I mean, I'm just ballparking it now. There's about, you know,
yeah, Democrats are practically the super minority, yeah, in the state legislature. And that's actually, you know, it goes to something that Awake the State had addressed a couple years ago during redistricting. For folks who don't know, redistricting every 10 years after the census gets done, those lines that deal with the congressional and the state house and the state senate get redrawn. And it's right now it's a very politicized process. It's definitely one where we call it, you know, gerrymandering takes place, which is basically fitting, creating maps that allow incumbents to stay in power. And that's what gerrymandered districts are. So, and we have a lot of that, despite, you know, the Democrats, despite having a voter registration advantage, have not been winning these seats. And so it's because, in part, because of the huge effect that gerrymandering has in our politics. That's not, you know, not speaking about the state level, that's a whole different issue, but there is a huge problem with when our state state does not represent its people, and it creates inequities like this that, you know, we can, that allows Rick Scott to get away with these handouts, these corporate handouts, to defund and deprioritize education, the court systems, the environment. And so, you know, gerrymandering has a huge impact on that.
And part of this, it can be attributed to money in politics. Certainly the Republicans have a huge money advantage generally. And also part of it has to do with voter turnout. And it just seems that there's a tremendously different voter turnout in presidential election years compared with when people are just going and electing their representatives in the off-year elections, I guess is what they call it, like the one coming up in 2018.
Yep.
I don't know if there's anything to add to that, but...
Yeah, and so we also were, you know, we endorsed Hillary Clinton, we endorsed a lot of our local folks here, and just as an example, Councilman Louis Vieira, who won by less than 70 votes, we were on the ground, we endorsed him, we engaged him with our communities, and we won that by less than 70 votes in a few thousand vote turnout election, which is pretty, you know, it's fairly small for, it's a city council election that happens a couple months after the presidential election, so it doesn't get enough, you know, as much media attention as we would like it to be, but we understand that turnout and continuous engagement is everything. That, you know, the ballot box matters, and then getting engaged afterwards matters. So that's one of the things that's been inspiring since this most recent election, is not only the election didn't turn out necessarily as we would have liked, but the amount of people now that are engaged and are aware and are woke from some of the things that they are seeing that transpiring in the federal government helps engage that conversation, to help move that needle towards the conversation that we need to have for Florida that's equitable for everybody.
Well, we have a caller on the line who wants to talk about the Muslim ban. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I think what Jeff Sessions said was incorrect about more terrorists coming from outside the country. I think all the evidence I've seen show that actually there's people, more terror acts and terrorism are committed by people born in the United States. And, if where there are terrorists coming from outside our country, it's mostly in Saudi Arabia, but yet they don't have anything to do with banning them. So I think this is a political thing.
All right, thank
you. Oh, by the way.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Yeah, I think you're definitely right about the number of terrorist acts it has been from people in the United States, for sure. But I think the way that Sessions put it, which may be even less important than the way you put it, is he said that the number of prosecutions, I think it was, and there's a lot of examples where, you know, people argue that the defendants have been entrapped and that they get prosecuted for terrorism when no act has ever even happened. They just, agree to some cash payment from some guy who happens to be an FBI informant or something, and then they get prosecuted for terrorism. So I think that's what Sessions was referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I think in Florida, too, that a lot of folks aren't aware of is there's a lot of anti-immigrant legislation that's coming from Tallahassee as well. I mean, this trickles down from the national to the state policies. And so you have a lot of these anti-immigrant bills that are coming forward to the legislature, and we got to be very concerned about how these, you know, that we have a long sort of history with racism in Florida, and these bills are counterproductive to actually providing a diverse, engaged and fruitful workforce and culture in our state. And so these things from the national are trickling down to the state. So Awake the State is hoping to make sure we push back against those type of policies, the Trump-esque policies at the state level. So
I need so much more time on this show because there's so many topics I didn't get to. We didn't talk about the Everglades in South Florida. We didn't talk about medical marijuana or gambling, but we will follow the show. We will talk about this all through the legislative session. Well, Tim, thanks. One last time, let people know when and where your Awake the State press conference is tomorrow.
So tomorrow it's going to be at 2 p.m. in Gaslight Park. We have a lot of great coalition partners there. And again, the Awake is for a reason, because we're going to be awake for the rest of the session for the next two and four years when these elections have an impact on these policies. So
All right. Thank you so much for coming back on WMNF's Midpoint, Tim.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Tim Heberlein is Political Operations Director at Organize Florida. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news or on Facebook or Twitter at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineer, James Rossi, and our phone answerer, Jeff Haynes. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. And right now, after NPR headlines, is executive session with Craig Kopp. So stick around, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.